Okay, I think next up is April with agenda paper 5. Excuse me, that shouldn't have happened.
There's a Queen of Sheba.
A lot about somebody's personality, but I'm not quite sure what it says. Call of the Mountain King.
Actually, that's a call that I should take if you'll take over.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, so agenda paper 5 and April.
Okay, thanks. Agenda paper 5 relates to two submissions that were discussed at the November meeting. In each example, a structured entity had been created to lease a single asset to a single lessee. In one submission, the lease is an operating lease, and in the other, it's a finance lease. The submitter whose example related to an operating lease asked whether the lessee should consolidate. The submitter of the finance lease example asked whether the lender should consolidate. In both cases, that decision would be based on an assessment of which entity has power over the relevant activities of the structured entity. In November, you tentatively decided not to add this topic to the agenda for the reasons which are noted in paragraph 5 of this paper, and in particular because you concluded that the principles established within an IFRS 10 would enable a determination to be made when all the required information is known. We received 3 comment letters, which are provided as agenda paper 5A. One comment letter agreed with the Interpretation Committee's decision for the reasons given in the tentative agenda decision. Another respondent thought that the transaction was common in its jurisdiction and the topic should be taken onto the Interpretation Committee's agenda. The third respondent also thought that the topic should be taken onto the Interpretation Committee agenda and discusses the effect that purpose and design might have on an assessment of power. They also comment on a number of points raised in the November 2014 agenda papers. Now, the staff think that a number of the points that are raised in that letter were discussed by the Interpretation Committee at its November meeting. These points are discussed in paragraph 15 of today's agenda paper and include having the right to use an asset for a period of time in and of itself would not be expected to give a lessee decision-making rights that would provide power over the lessor. But in the discussions in November, we also noted that there would be some exceptions to those circumstances. A number of you were uncomfortable with using criteria in IAS 17, which is based on risks and rewards, as an indicator of control in IFRS 10. And there are further points in the assessment of control, the fact that we had inadequate information to decide on either submission. But the overall conclusion was that the principles established within IFRS 10 would enable a determination to be made. Now, as a result, the staff concluded that the arguments presented by the third respondent are a continuation of the themes that were discussed in the November meeting. And consequently, the staff think that the Interpretation Committee conclusion on this topic are still valid for the reasons which are given in paragraph 18 of this paper. The staff recommend, therefore, that the Interpretation Committee finalize the tentative agenda decision in its original wording, which is Appendix A to the paper. Do you have comments on that?
Okay. Any questions or comments? So, Reinhardt?
Yeah, I'll make a comment just that, consistent with our comment letter, I don't think it's clear from the agenda decisions as to whether the lease itself is a relevant or activity of the entity or not, and hence whether you should consider that and determine the consolidation conclusion. And because there is a view that leasing doesn't create, that one view is that leasing an asset absorbs the variability, and therefore for a large ticket item that is leased, you could come to the conclusion that the lessee is the should consolidate, which might overturn the leasing decision under IS 17. And I acknowledge that in the staff paper, paragraph 15 does summarize, make some comments about that, and suggests implicitly that I think we would that leasing is not a relevant activity, and that it's really the lease is creating variability and it's being absorbed by the note holders effectively through credit risk. But I think it's not clear, and that's a matter of principle, that I note that in the U.S., my understanding is that the U.S. consolidation literature specifically had to have an amendment to it to deal with that specific issue to ensure that the consolidation conclusion would not overturn the leasing conclusion.
Okay. Do you want to come back?
Well, it was just to say that we did have quite a long discussion about whether or not the lessee could control and whether it was a relevant activity. And I think my sense of that discussion was that people didn't feel that the right to use the asset was actually a relevant activity. But in the end, we didn't want to put anything specifically in the agenda decision about that, because there were some instances. For example, if you were in a group structure where you were a parent and one of your subsidiary actually leased you something, you might control them for reasons other than being the lessee of the subsidiary. So we took out sort of any specific reference to a conclusion in that area.
Okay, Charlotte?
I think consistent with my views when this was presented before, I don't agree with the agenda decision. For the reasons in the German standard setters comments and for the KPMG reasons. I think the issue is widespread. There's a big question about how you work out what's in the vehicle, what its relevant activities are, which comes up not just in leases but in all sorts of lending activities, sort of sale and repurchase agreements, collateral agreements, and it is just a really big issue that people deal with all the time. I don't think IFRS 10, even if you know all the facts and circumstances, IFRS 10 doesn't get you to a clear answer. There is a lot of diversity in how people treat that, and I think it would be useful to look at this.
John?
I mean, I found myself in agreement with the comment letter submitted by KPMG that I think we could be a little more helpful in what we say in our agenda decision about the assessment of the relevant activities. And it seems to me that in paragraph 15 we acknowledge we've discussed some of these, but obviously we didn't reach a conclusion on them, and therefore they're not in the agenda decision. But it does seem to me that I think to say we don't expect significant diversity in practice is, I'm not sure that's, well, maybe it's an accurate review of the committee, but I think there is significant diversity emerging in this in practice. So I do agree with the comments that are coming from the German standard setter. And I think that the discussion we had, we could have explored maybe this a little more as to whether we could provide a little more guidance on how the assessment will be made in these situations.
So would you be, just to clarify, so would you be thinking, John, that you would suggest that some of what's in paragraph 15 of this paper potentially could get embedded within the...
Yeah, I mean, it's acknowledging 15 that we discussed these, but we didn't, I mean, we did discuss them, but we didn't necessarily reach a landing on how we would apply them to all of these particular fact patterns. So whether it would need further discussion to actually to be fair, I mean, I don't think these were decisions or conclusions at a committee in any way.
Because I think the only conclusion that came out of those discussions was that we would take out, in paragraph 15C, we would take out the reference to the operating lease and the effect of IAS 17 on an assessment of control.
Right.
So we effectively came to a conclusion that they were chalk and cheese and we shouldn't, try and mix the two. So if we were to put something in, it would be, I think, a separate discussion again.
Yeah, I mean, I think 15, well, to me, 15A and 15D seem to contain something that was sort of useful. I mean, 15A sort of says that the lease, having the right to use the asset for a period of time in and of itself, would not be expected to give the lessee decision-making rights. You know, that seems to be, that would help people in terms of the practical difficulties of assessing these types of structures. And also in 15D, the comment that, you know, you do have to look at the rights in contractual arrangements other than just the lease. You've got to look at the totality of the rights that both inside and outside the vehicle. So.
Okay.
Yeah, a very similar point. I agree with the agenda decision, not to take this on, but in then reading the agenda decision and looking at paragraph 15, I thought there's some great stuff, really helpful stuff in paragraph 15. And I know I wasn't part of the prior discussion, so I don't really know where there were conclusions and not. But if we could reach conclusions, actually bringing some of the items from paragraph 15, particularly A, B, and D, into the agenda decision, I think would be very useful to constituents.
Okay. Martin?
Yeah. To be honest, I was surprised that there is no diversity, or that it seems to be no diversity in praxis. The German standard set was quoted several times in the last minutes, and in Germany we see diversity in practice. I'm not sure what's coming from the side of enforcers or so, what one could currently identify there. However, if it turns out that this really is probably only a German issue, then I would say, okay, it's correct that we do not deal with it. On the other hand, the question is, how could we probably give some more beneficial guidance if we believe that this is beneficial for everyone? Because I believe, I mean, with regard to facts and circumstances, it is challenging. You could modify slightly, a little bit, your overall situation and might come to another accounting solution. However, to illustrate a little bit what's in and what's out could probably be beneficial. So that's my view.
Tony?
I guess I recognize the concerns that some other members of the committee have raised. My sense is that I'd be reluctant for the committee to give the impression that we were going to take on a series of specific fact patterns and give advice on the accounting. But at the same time, if there is a way that we could add something to these agenda decisions to give people a bit of a steer, I don't think I would object to that. I think if we do that, though, it does have to be a separate conversation, because I'm not sure we're set up in the context of this meeting to decide what extra language, if any, we would include in these agenda decisions.
Andrew?
I'm actually in favour of finalising the agenda decisions more or less as they are, although I think the DSG's comments about diversity means we might need to just revisit the comments about lack of evidence of diversity. But I think there are dangers in just going off and clarify. IFRS 10 requires a holistic assessment based on all facts and circumstances, and to make some fairly definitive statement that the right to use the leased asset is or is not a relevant activity outside of the wider fact pattern, and given that that could be extrapolated to other situations where there's some kind of rights over the output and use of the output, at least it's just an example of using the output. I'm not sure that's advisable. I think in the end, this any assessment is going to depend on very specific facts and circumstances, and to clarify bits and pieces of that does not seem like the best way forward to me.
Bruce, Bonnie?
Yeah, I'm coming from the same similar camp to Andrew's. I tell you what my concern is. I agree that when I read through all the issues in paragraph 15, I think there's a great amount in there, and I think it would be useful, but my worry is that if we sit starting to debate what to put into the agenda decision, I think we're going to have this coming back to the next two meetings. This is a very, very specific issue, and I think that we're not going to get, and what worries me is we're now going to debating how to put it into agenda decision. I think we could end up writing another IFRS 11 on this. We could be sitting here debating 12 pages of guidance we're putting into something, so I don't think we're going to come to a solution on this. So I would also be in favour of just finalising this as is.
Okay, Bonnie, we have two widely separated views. Or do you have a different one?
I think my comment on this was addressing the statement in the draft agenda decision indicating that there was no diversity in practice, because it seemed like that was contrary to some of the feedback that was received, particularly from the German comment letter. So while I don't disagree with finalizing the agenda as written, I think either that needs to be taken out or it needs to be further addressed. Because if there is diversity in practice, do we need to look at this as a more generic issue rather than the two specific questions that were posed? I do not want to be providing guidance on a case-by-case basis, but if this is a broader, more diverse issue, I guess that's the question of, is that the issue we need to address further?
Okay, let me separate this into pieces, beginning with the easy one. My personal view is that I've always been reluctant to use diversity in practice as a reason for or against, because it's incredibly difficult to assess objectively. And if we thought everybody was doing it wrong, we probably still ought to do something. So the first proposal is that we eliminate the reference to diversity in practice from the agenda decision, whatever else we do. May I see those in favor of doing that? Okay, and that was Bonnie's view, so that makes it unanimous. Paul McCullough's in the room. Okay, the second issue, let me state it without introducing an opinion. There are those who believe that the agenda decision should be expanded. At least one of those says we're not ready to do that today. I think that was Tony's position. So that we ought to do more with the agenda decision, but it cannot be done today, so we'd have to bring it back to the next meeting. I have a proposal to attach to that, but those in favor of that approach, that we expand the agenda decision, but we can't do it today. May I see a set of hands on that?
Seven.
Okay, is that enough?
It is, a 7 out of 13 members present.
Mikkel's back in the room, and we got to ask Bonnie. The issue, Mikkel, is we expand the agenda decision beyond what's here, but that probably requires that we bring it, that requires that we bring it back to the next meeting. So we had 7 people who just voted in favor of that.
Opposed.
Opposed. Okay. Bonnie?
Can I get a clarification? If we're proposing to expand based on these two specific fact patterns, I oppose it. If we're talking about the broader, a broader issue, then I would agree with that. So I guess I maybe just need some clarification on what you were proposing.
Okay, I was hoping you wouldn't ask that. Because then I was going to attach. Okay, well, we have 7 in favor, which is what we need to keep talking. What I would propose, so that we do not go into a broader issue, is that we focus on the paragraphs in paragraph 15, or the sub-paragraphs in paragraph 15, and see what we can do about turning some of that into an expansion of the agenda decision. And I think it's fair to say, number one, that we can't do that offline. Yeah. Number two, that it takes another meeting. And number three, having done so, we'll have to re-expose it. But that's what I would propose as the course forward, because we don't want to just reopen IFRS 11 for anybody who's got a lease. Katrina, that's what we don't want to do, right?
We don't want to do
that. We don't want to do that. Katrina's our charge of the leases project. Okay, is that acceptable to everybody as the approach going forward? Bonnie, any problem with that?
No.
No. Philippe, and I think Charlotte wanted to get in too.
Question on paragraph D, under 15D, an entity would consider all the rights that it has in relation to the investee. Wouldn't it be rights and obligations? Because I think what you consider is the variability of your returns in relation to your power, and the variability could come from the rights and obligations. Let's assume this special purpose entity has external financing. It is a leveraged lease with a lot of external finance provided by a bank to the special purpose entity. Let's assume that this financing is guaranteed by the lessee. Then maybe you have created some obligations to the lessee which creates some variability to the returns of the entity, maybe. So I think I would not focus only on the rights, but I would focus on rights and obligations in relation to the investee.
Yeah, I think, Philippe, you're exactly right in the context of your overall assessment of control. I think what 15D was referring to, that in the context of assessing whether you have power, you're always assessing rights. And, of course, what you say, your broader rights and obligations play into the overall assessment of control and looking at not only power, but do I have, you know, exposure to variable returns.
Yeah,
so I think here the rights was referring into assessing power, just what you're right.
It wasn't my intention that we'd wordsmith these. As a matter of fact, it was specifically not my intention. We'll do that next time. Charlotte, you wanted to come in?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I object to restricting it to just looking at these very narrow issues. And actually, I mean, I object to just finalising the agenda decision. I'd rather put it on the agenda, but I know I'm in a minority.
Okay. Point noted. Okay, April, you're going to have to come back.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, this... agenda paper 6.